Introduction. As you can probably tell, I am not Miss Cat. Miss Cat is away this weekend, and we hope she has a fun time, and we look forward to having her back next weekend. I am joined today by the wonderful guest co-host, Madam Nadia, who is a fan favorite. She frequently joins us as the guest co-host and is often popularly demanded by people to be on the radio show. So we're very excited to have her on. And as Papa Newt mentioned, our guest today is Professor Charles Porterfield, who has his own show, The Now You Know Show, on the Lucky Mojo Radio Network. So we are very excited to have both of them on here with a really cool topic that we've talked about in the past, but are looking forward to discussing once again. Before we get there, let's just catch up with what's going on kind of in the world. The madness that is 2016 continues. I think at the beginning of the year, I made some predictions, Ms. Cat made some predictions. We all talked about this, and they're all coming true, and they're all very, unfortunately, very accurate. And, you know, this is... the reality is that 2016 isn't going to get better. It can continue to be one of those challenging years. I'd rather not look at it as a bad year, but as a challenging year. And that craziness is an opportunity to really come together as a community. For those of you that are following the news, you know, freakish weather going on. There's flooding in southern Louisiana, so let's make sure to keep the people of Louisiana in prayers as property is being damaged and people are, their livelihoods are being overturned. There's also an uprising in Milwaukee where there was another shooting that happened with the police, another police shooting, and it has led to the community expressing an outrage and its frustration. The African-American community in the United States has been particularly under pressure from the very beginning, but in recent years it's been capturing media attention as black men in particular have been shot by police officers, and it has led to a rupturing of trust between police and the community, and a real close look at the sort of racist and racial bias within policing tactics, and the disproportionate police brutality that the black community in particular faces in this country. And it's brought all of these to light in recent years. 2015 has been really big in that regard. There's been a lot of protests, a lot of uprisings. And Milwaukee is another city that's now currently facing that as people are coming to terms with the case that's developing there. Last night there was a protest, some of which did involve damaged property, and people are, unfortunately, the media seems to be focused primarily on property damage and not so much on loss of life, but such is the case of racist coverage, if you will, in the United States, and why Black Lives Matter is so important at this particular moment, all while ongoing, this crazy election process where we continue to see weird populist dictatorship taking hold in the United States. So this is the time to come together as a community for those of us that are root workers, those of us that are spiritual practitioners, to be aware of these moments, to be aware of what's going on, and also to work towards healing and reconciliation and truth and justice. If you're a root worker who all you think about are love spells and whatnot, you're kind of missing the point. Root workers are members of the community, and if you don't feel when the community has been pricked, then something is deeply wrong with your spiritual connection. So it is important to keep these topics in mind. It is important to be aware of them, to not just dismiss them as happening in other cities or happening over there or happening to that community, and to recognize that this is part of a broader and global system of inequality that we as root workers are particularly positioned in dealing from a spiritual perspective. So be aware of that. Be conscious of that. And remember that root workers are activists in their own right, working for people who don't always have a voice, who don't always have power, and helping to empower and to give that voice. So that's my spiel. I bore everyone with politics, but whenever I see these things going on, I think it's important to remind us as a community to come together and really work towards the betterment of our society, and especially for those of us, for those communities and those people that feel disenfranchised and disempowered. So let's check in with our wonderful co-host, Madam Nadia, see how she's doing and what she's been up to. I know that she's always got things going on in her world. So Madam Nadia, welcome to you. I'm so happy to have you on here.
Oh, thank you, Conjurman Ali. It's a pleasure to be here. And as much as I do have wonderful things to say, I'm really happy that you're bringing in the sociopolitic situation. I'm not in Milwaukee. I'm in Chicago, but it's getting closer. And I've been telling people, it's not the other. It's you. This is part of your community. So whenever the police starts becoming your judge, your executioner, your court, then it's just a matter of time that it's going to get into your face and your whatever man would be chopped on the street. So it's just pretty, this year is pretty intense. I think that it's also the human condition is quite fascinating to me. I don't know. I want to be more positive and I want to be more uplifting, but I think that the predictions that you guys made in the beginning of the year are quite on point. I was listening to an astrological podcast that I listened to by Ann Ortley, and there is some Saturn just went direct, and there's going to be a couple of eclipses, and she always makes this cycle where, you know, you're closing a cycle from a certain time or a certain energy was, you know, the celestial energies were similar at this time and that time. So we're talking about Chernobyl and 9/11. This is what we're going to be experiencing in the next couple of weeks.
The 2016 is going to certainly go down as a year of transformative change, and that type of change never comes without pain, without struggle, without a lot of soul searching and a bit of an existential crisis. I joked with some colleagues of mine. We historians often watch these things and go, oh, wow, this looks very familiar. We've seen this before. We joked that late-stage democracy seems to be having a identity crisis.
Absolutely. It's a whole new world, but not really out there.
It's new, but it's always the same, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely yeah, the optimist among us definitely recognizes it. Of course, I'm being sarcastic, but it's beautiful in a way that it fits our topic today so well, you know.
It does.
Getting our rituals on and stuff.
Yeah, we have a fantastically grim and chthonic topic, which I think is actually quite fitting. So speaking of that, let's bring in the wonderful Professor Porterfield. Welcome. We're so glad to have you, make an appearance here from the Now You Know show over to our humble Sunday show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. And yes, it is an interesting time indeed. Particularly right now. I mean, the moon is void. The moon is void. Friday was Shabbat Kazan, which is the Shabbat of prophecy and vision.
Yes.
And today is the 9th of Av, which is the commemoration of the destruction of the two temples. And so, what a fun, happy little time. And I think you're both correct. This is an interesting topic for us to bring up in this moment and in this time and in this place. And I have a very controversial thing that I want to say. And I've said it before, and they're probably not going to stop me saying it again. And it has to do with a relation between our topic today, the cemetery, the veneration of the dead, the work in the cemetery, the visiting of that other kingdom, and the social and political things that we have going on. And whenever we talk about the graveyard, inevitably it drifts into a conversation about the ancestors and veneration. And there are all of these people who are so, the ancestors this and the ancestors that. And they're not necessarily talking just about their ancestors. They are often talking about the ancestors connected to a work, whether it's Vodun or whether it's any of the ATRs, etc. And my controversial statement is this. If you are not going to support the generations of the ancestors, if you are not going to be out there, if you are not going to be aware, and as you said, Ali, if you are not have that connection where you don't prick when you see these things happening, if you don't care about the children, the great, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren of these ancestors, then to hell with the ancestors, man. Seriously, your ancestor veneration is flawed because you don't care about what those ancestors put into this world, which first and foremost was people.
Yeah, I think this is a very important topic. So what we're going to discuss today is the other world, as you so rightly put it, the spirit world, but specifically in sort of its physical embodiment, as in the cemetery, funeral rites. Now, this is part of an earlier discussion that we had with Professor Porterfield several weeks back. So it's a part two. It's a follow-up to that. Well, we're going to be talking about this. And I think you said something very important there about the living descendants. And I've said this over and over again, and that is that the spirit, specifically the spirits of the dead, but the same could be said about other forms of spirits, but the spirits of the dead in particular, ancestors, are a community-forming force. We often view the ancestors in kind of this abstract term, right? They are those people. They are this amorphous force out there, but they're actually community-forming. They're about the living. They're related very clearly to their descendants, and how those descendants live their life. They're tied to a community. They're tied to a people. And they form a present community. They are a community-forming force. And unless we recognize that, unless we try to work within that vein, I think we're missing out a great deal on what it means to do ancestral work or work with the spirits of the dead. They're not just spirits for hire. They're not just kind of these abstract entities that you light some candles to every once in a while and say some prayers. But they're very much, their presence is felt in the present community. And that's very important to recognize. So part of the kind of struggle of the modern day medium, the modern day root worker, the modern day spiritualist, is that when the community is broken, it is partly because there is an ancestral trauma that we're trying to still work through, right? And that's That's a reality. What historians would point out to and say, this is, you know, systemic racism of some sort, right? Right. The answer, as spirituals point out, as an ancestral problem, as the ancestors remaining restless. I mean, in a lot of spiritual practices, it's often pointed out that there is a whole cadre of spirits that are nameless, their ancestral spirits that are completely nameless, because they represent those spirits that were thrown over ships into the ocean. And so the ocean itself becomes this kind of body of spirits that have been forgotten, that have been washed away, whose names aren't remembered, who didn't make transatlantic journey, and yet that is part of the present community. That entity, that power, that energy is still felt. And so the question is, how do we address that? And one of the ways is funerary practices. And any anthropologist will tell you that funerary practices are about putting spirits to rest while maintaining a good connection to the living. So, Madame Nadia, you are well known as this powerful spirit worker. I often envision you as dancing in the cemetery.
I think you actually saw me dancing in the cemetery before. That's not a lie. But
no, it's not much of an image if it's real. Yeah, but how do you work in the
Well, first, I think that what it's important to me to say that I think a lot of times we see people in our day and time treating spirituality like they're going to shop in Whole Foods. They're picking and choosing, you know, oh, this looks exotic and fancy. Then I'm going to pick that out. And what is not looking so hot or what is being sold at Safeway or Jewel, then I'm not going to go over there. So the same thing with spirituality. Mm-hmm. We see it a lot with African diasporic religions where people go out and they start, you know, we had all these big arguments about spirits like the mummy spirits and things like that. And people were arguing, well, I am allowed to have ancestors like that. I'm not allowed to have ancestors like that. Things of that sort. And then we talk about things like what we call in our practice the Kalunga or the ocean, right? The place where the cross section between that ocean and the ocean of the cemetery or the ocean of the souls. And I think that starting work in a cemetery, it's very important to think what cemetery you're going into. And if you have mm-hmm. issues with certain spiritualities and you are honest enough to admit, or you have issues with certain, I don't want to use the word race because it's dumb, but I'm going to use it anyway mm-hmm. because that's how we refer to things. If you have issues with races, you need to be very careful about where you go and what you declare. Because spirits as a vague sort of umbrella term, they are very real. If you do a lot of work in the cemetery, if you do a lot of necromantic work, you know how real they are. They walk with you all the time. You feel them really good. So you got to be really, really careful. And I'd rather people be very honest with themselves about how they feel. And I really always promote a dialogue than being like, oh, that's all good, that's all great. Let's just go and just dive into it. Because they're going to give you some shit, man. They're not going to take it. Your life is going to turn into a hell because there are internal workings that need to be figured out before you step into the ground of the cemetery. But if you are able to sit with yourself and you're mature enough to do that kind of work, and I think that any respectable spiritual worker, root worker, whatever we want to call ourselves, any one of us needs to be able to sit down and do that kind of work. It's very important. This is what we owe to our own selves, our ancestors, our clients, and so forth. And we grow and we mature in our practice. But before we go into the cemetery, we need to have a sit down with ourselves. We need to figure out who we are and what we're looking for and how do we willing, if we ask the ancestors to fight for us on the other side, we need to be able to fight for our ancestors or whoever we now include as our ancestors on this side. And that includes socio-political standpoint, okay, especially the ones that are brighter of skin on our side of the fence over here that actually have the privilege and can use it in favor of other people. I think it's really important. And if you don't think about it, if you don't do that and you go into the cemetery, I think that these questions are going to be very well in your face in one way or another. But if you are able to mature and you're able to start doing that process, then the cemetery can offer a lot of answers for you, not just in terms of work of making a spell happen, making something happen, but I think constant contact with spirits like that makes you bigger as a human being, which is for me the most important part of this practice. But that has been my process, especially in the past few years.
I wanted to ask her. So Professor Porterfield, Jaya here says, yes, I remember Professor Porterfield talking about cemetery work, and they didn't dig his stance on African Americans. So what did you do to kind of pick up where Madame Nadia left off and really expand on how you started off discussing this work? Because we're not just talking about kind of ancestors here. We're talking about rites that connect the living to the dead, right? And that is very important to recognize. Those rites in and of themselves have context, have meaning, and they serve a particular purpose. So I was hoping you could speak a little bit to that.
Well, the first thing I would like to speak about is what I believe to be perhaps one of the most common and universal, quote, funerary rites. And this is a funerary rite that does not necessarily involve the immediate family or even the loved ones of the deceased. And we see this particular rite, and it's a very simple rite. We see it in Islam, we see it in Judaism, we see it in Christianity, we see it in some of the earlier pagan traditions, we see it in Zoroastrianism, and that is that one stops and rises with you are sitting, or becomes still if you are standing and walking when a funeral procession goes by. And this is almost universal. This is this idea that when the funeral procession comes by, whether we see it in our cars, and here in Texas, I will tell you, to this day, people still pull their cars over to the side of the road, not to get out of the way. This could be on a very, very large road where there's absolutely no need for you to pull over. You're not in the way of the funeral procession, but people will still pull over to the side of the road and sit there in their cars. Older gentlemen and ladies of my generation and earlier will actually leave the car. We'll actually leave the car and stand outside of the car. And you still see that many, many places in the South here in America. And you have many writings about this. There are writings in Islam about the need to rise when a funeral procession goes by. We see the same thing in Judaism. In Judaism, it is said that he who does not rise for the funeral procession has no mercy, has no sense of giving, has no love for widows and orphans. Even if there are not, you know, orphans necessarily involved in this, you don't even know who this funeral is for. And we even see that going back to earlier cultures where one was expected to join a funeral procession that one encountered. Again, whether you knew the person or not. You were here's the funeral procession. I must now join in at the end and follow it all the way to the graveyard, and I can then leave at the graveyard gate or at the graveyard, the opening to the place where we inter the dead. And that, to me, is a very, not only simple, I mean, what could be simpler than standing? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's no prepared prayer. There's nothing formulaic about it at all. You're just standing. And you are then sometimes joining that procession. And to me, this is a very powerful moment. This is an acknowledgement of death being in the midst of life. This is honor being paid to that spirit. And this is an encounter with spirit. This is an encounter with the dead, meaning you don't have to go, you know, to the graveyard to encounter the dead. They're everywhere, man, you know. They're because, you know, certainly, if you walk into a hospital, you are going to encounter the dead, you know? And we have a sense of that in some places that gather people to us. How many of us have either heard of or experienced a sensation of encountering the dead when entering much older homes, large hotels that have been in a certain place for generations? You know, this idea that we are encountering the dead even in life, and in that moment what we should do is have a moment to pay respect. That, to me, is important. And is, again, the simplest right.
Go ahead.
No, that's that. That's it.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point. And I think you're in the discussion of encountering the dead is very important, right? Because that's what funerary rites are in some ways. They create the means by which we encounter the dead going forward. In some ways, it's how you define the relationship, right? The funeral is how the relationship or the funerary rites or how the relationship with the dead are defined. They are the dead to be forgotten or the dead to be invited in conversation or the dead laid to rest or the dead. Right? This is it's the beginning of the next stage of the conversation. Okay, when you were alive, we spoke this way. Now that you're dead, this is how we will communicate, right? So the funerary rites set the tone. And why is this so important? Because there is a historical difference in how we deal with the dead now than how we used to deal with the dead. So when we look at the root of hoodoo in particular, Congolese society didn't have a concept of a cemetery, right? So the ancestors were buried in their huts or in their homes or in their dwelling places. They would die, and then they would be buried at that very place, and you could visit them. The older ancestors were down the stream of water. The river carried them over. This is why we dispose of things in water, to carry them out into the realm of spirit. And in fact, when colonialists first arrived, really, in Africa, by traveling through waters, they were often seen as kind of the vengeance of the bad ancestors. It wasn't this kind of like, oh, they are the ancestors. No. It was the understanding that they came with the sort of revenge or the vengeance of the bad ancestors. And during the plantation period in particular, Black Americans were buried on the property. Right. So cemeteries as kind of necropolises, as cities of the dead, that are kind of outside the bounds of the city or gated or secluded away, is a relatively recent phenomenon. And it emerges, as an attempt to almost sanitize the dead, right? The dead become removed from society. Whereas we see that in much of our history, the dead and the ancestors suffuse all aspects of life, that they live alongside the spirits. They live alongside the living. They live alongside. And this idea then, with them being removed into cemeteries, into graveyards that are outside of the city, requires that funerary rite to set the stage and set the tone for how that relationship develops. There's a reason we do the things that we do. Why do we give water? Why do we give candle? Some people give tobacco or coffee or tea or whatnot. These all have particular means. I mean, if you read, there's a fantastic book, if anyone's interested in kind of the history of transatlantic slave trade, by Stephanie Smallwood, called Saltwater Slavery. And she talks about how, for many people, going and working on the plantation that then took your life meant that the item that you were working on, the product that you were working on, tobacco, literally became part of your spirit. And so giving the tobacco to the spirits was a way of recognizing the spiritual labor that went into something like that. So there's a reason we give these things in the funerary rite, and there's a reason we have these funerary rites. They're part of a social, spiritual experience of encountering the dead, because the dead have a certain place in society now that requires that type of encounter. So, Madam Nadi, what are some of the things that you do? Let's talk about actual practice. We've talked about a lot of abstract and history and whatnot. What are some of the things that you do, funerary rites, cemetery rites, in order to build that connection, in order to connect to the ancestors, in order to contact the dead?
I had to do a lot of work and still have to do a lot of work in order to connect with my ancestors, because I have a long history of family division and immigration. I mean, most of everybody knows that I'm Jewish. So I know very, very few of my ancestors, as opposed to some people that know full lineages of their ancestors, where they came from, what their name were, and so forth, where it's easy for you to connect your line. For me, it takes a little bit more work. On the other hand, on the spiritual aspect of things, my ancestor core, I always joke about it. It's like a zoo because I have spirits from all over the place. It's kind of like my spiritual being is also, I guess, big onto immigration and crossing borders and lines all over the place. So I had to reconcile a few things, and I had to bring in some ideas from my culture as well as to adopt a few ideas. And for instance, a lot of my the way I build my spirit altar or my ancestor altar is based on spiritism, because this is how I was taught first to do it. My own family is not particularly religious, and although we do understand the concept of this is a picture of our ancestors, and we go a couple of times a year to the cemetery to venerate them, but this is, we don't do any more than that. In fact, I'm connected the most in my family to our ancestors. But I think that the ancestors appreciate any work that we do for them. And there is not a lot of wrong that we can do unless, for instance, very simple example, your ancestor was an alcoholic, do not give them offerings of alcohol. I would not recommend. But yeah, that's not wouldn't be a good idea. But I feel that the minute we start, we make a simple statement and we say, hey, I am interested in connecting with you guys on the other side. Start, open that door for me, and I will start walking through, and you will come through from the other side, and we're going to start connecting. And for me, it is done through setting up a boveda. My way of a boveda, I'm a little bit different here because I'm not putting a big crucifix on it, but putting pictures of my ancestors, doing offerings of water, offerings of tobacco sometimes, food, especially on holy days, big holy days, I would go down and I will do that. But the biggest and I think easiest thing to do is to start to actually talk with your ancestors. Literally sit down there and start addressing them as people if you know their names. It's easiest if you start from those that you actually knew, because you know exactly how the dynamics were, and you just, of course, obviously they're on the other side. But you start communicating, and you start with time listening to the answers. You start hearing them. And the minute that that happens, it's also much easier to go to a cemetery and realize, hey, there is a bunch of dead people here, and it's not just graves, and I actually hear and feel and see it and can talk to them. So it's a very transformative, very simple. It connects you, reconnects you to your roots, but it also opens you, opens new avenues in spiritual work. And going back to your what you were talking about, the Congolese practices of having people buried in your own home, a lot of people who start their spiritual path in African diasporic religion will hear something that says, we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors. Which, in, you know, thinking about Congolese practices, that probably literally what happened. You stood on the shoulders of your ancestors because they were in your home.
Very true.
Literally. So you felt
the
physical support of that. But we still carry that, and then thinking about going out of that, because I spent a lot of time studying tantric Hinduism, specifically Shakti-oriented. And in the Hindu tradition today, which is very influenced by the Aryan of thought forms, I guess, everything that's connected to death is considered unclean. But if you're a tantric left-path practitioner, you do your practices in the shmashan, in the cremation grounds. And I actually went to India and went barefoot in cremation ground, where you feel bones and things underneath your feet of people who weren't burned that really well. I guess their family wasn't that rich or whatever happened, or the monsoon brought those bones up. And it's a very powerful experience. It's very humbling. It reminds you of death. Now I'm going to jump into another culture. We're talking about Santissima Muerte, but very humbling experiences. I think working with your ancestors and ancestors in general are very humbling experiences.
Yeah,
but it's
very potent. Sarah Jacobson mentioned something about whether you can see, other people can see ancestral altars or not, right? And this comes down to various traditions. When we talk about ancestors, ancestor altars, working cemetery rites, they are going to vary from region to region in Hoodoo. Hoodoo is not a monolithic tradition. It's a It's a family of traditions. It's a satellite of traditions, a constellation, if you will. And some of them vary. For example, you'll find in Virginia and kind of the East Coast, East and South Coast, Georgia, North Carolina, there's a little bit more of a fearful dead approach. And for example, if you hear ancestors call your name, you're not supposed to respond to them. You're supposed to keep, you're supposed to lay the ghost down to rest. There's a lot more like, for example, exorcism-like. But whereas in Mississippi, Alabama, you will find ancestor altars were often right in the family room, and everyone saw them. And that's because they weren't even called ancestor altars. They were just places where you put the pictures of the dead, the family Bible, put up in a cup of water or coffee. So you are going to have different traditions when it comes to that. I wanted to ask you, Professor Porterfield, the same question I asked Matt and Mother. What are some of the ways, what are the things you do, actual practices, in order to, in that encounter with the spirit, to connect with the spirit, to connect with the dead and the ancestors?
Well, you all are throwing out such great stuff, I'm having to keep notes. So I have a couple, three, four things to say here. So first of all, let me quickly say that the law in the state of Texas to this day, Ali, is that if your property is unincorporated property, you may still place onto your property a private cemetery. People still do that in Texas. We still do bury people here near the houses, but only in unincorporated areas. The next thing I wanted to say very quickly is you had a brilliant phrase there, that to sanitize the dead.
Yes.
And that is such an important phrase that I have to spend a few moments with it very, very quickly. This is more than just a cultural or a spiritual idea of sanitizing the dead. This is also a literal, a medical idea of sanitizing the dead. And I encourage all the people that are listening to go back and really, really go back and research a couple of things for themselves. Research the poisoning laws in the United States the 1800s. Research the ingredients that go into goofer dust and ask yourself, why is this graveyard dirt so important? I think you're going to find, as is my opinion, that this has to do with the sanitation of the dead. This has to do with literal medical disease contaminant, okay, rather than spiritual contaminant. This has to do with these people died from the yellow fever, these people died from the scarlet fever, these people, you know, of course that's going to help you make something that's going to make people sicken and die. And then the next thing I wanted to say quickly is for me, this concept about the dead is simply this. Some of the people who are listening today like to collect pictures of France. They want to go see the Eiffel Tower. They're saving their pennies away. They hope someday to be able to go to Paris or France. There are people that want to go to England. There are people that want to go to Mexico, to Canada, to visit this place or that. The thing is, we're all going to visit the Kingdom of the Dead.
Yeah.
And so this is not removed from us, folks. Remember, someday you're going to be there too. So maybe make your connections today.
That is probably the best place to end that one, and a fantastic way to bring the conversation to a close. You too will visit the Kingdom of the Dead. Thank you for that topic. It was so, so good, and maybe we will have a sequel to the sequel some weeks down the line as we talk more about this. I know people are very interested. But it is time to do some readings, to do what we do best, and that is produce some root readings and prescribe some root work. So, Papa Newt, why don't you lead us forward?
The Lucky Mojo Hoosier Root Work Hour with your host, Counterman Ali, and special guest Madam Nadia, and this week's special guest, Professor Porterfield, will be right back. We'll be taking calls from our listeners and answering their questions through spiritual divination and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. Our call-in clients are selected from among those who filled out a short questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo form at form.luckymojo.com. You can listen to the show online through Blog Talk Radio or via telephone by dialing 818-394-8535. If you filled out a client question questionnaire at the forum, please dial in now to 818-394-8535 and press 1 to let us know that you're available to be on the air. We'll be selecting our callers by their area code, and if your area code is announced, we'd like you to say hello and let me, your announcer, Papa Newt, read a brief description of your situation before turning it over to our host. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our first caller. Our first caller we have is calling from area code 470 in Georgia. This is Missy. Missy, are you there?
I am here. How are you today?
Doing quite well, and I see this is your first time, hon, so welcome calling into the show.
It is.
Oh, is it? Oh, I must be misreading. I'm so sorry, hon. Welcome back then. Let's take a look here at your history here. You've had a reading with Miss Cat back in May, but now, want to get some clarity. This is on this specific situation, or was it different?
It was relating to him, but different.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. And you did have a candle blockbuster lit at the Missionary Independent Church, but the situation has improved, but then they got pretty bad. So let me go ahead and read your situation. The man I love and I are in a bad spot. We met while he was still married in a married situation over the last year, have been up and down. He is torn emotionally as I am. Now we are both single, but the past haunt us. Due to circumstances over the last week, he never wants to speak to me again, and we are at an emotional bad place. I need guidance, advice, and look at the situation on the metaphysical realm. Turning back to you, Professor. Coach Rally.
Thanks for that, Papa New. Thank you, Missy, for trusting us with your situation. Just a couple clarifying questions, and we're going to have Madam Nadia, who's filling in for Kat, do your first reading, followed by Professor Porterfield, and then I will prescribe some root work. So you say that due to circumstances over the last week, he never wants to speak to me again. So I'm assuming you guys had a fight this past week and have now completely fallen out. What was the fight about?
Right. So it was actually... now it would have been, 2 weeks ago, we had a big kerfuffle, if you will, and putting it as a fight is very minor. It was much more major than that, but we'd gotten to a place where we started to spend time together again and just kind of fell back into the old pattern. We're spending time, we're going out on dates, we're being intimate, not intimate, but intimate even still. Mm-hmm. And then it came to a point where I left his house at 7, and then at 10 o'clock, there was another girl that went to spend the night, and I had a discussion with him where I'm like, you need to tell me where we're going with this, because, you know, we, like I said, we met when he was married, and now he's divorced, and part of that plan was, you know, when you go through that process, that we're going to see where we can end up. That is not what's happening at this point, and I just need to know if I need to mojo him or if I need to just let it go.
What is your sign of the zodiac? What is your sign of the zodiac, Missy?
Say it again, I'm sorry.
What is your sign of the zodiac?
I'm a Libra and he's a Virgo.
Libra and Virgo. Okay, thank you very much. We're gonna have Madam Nadia do your first reading.
Easier for me to hear. Okay.
Madam Ray?
Are you there? Okay.
There we go.
Sorry. Here we go. Hi, Missy. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Kat?
So I have two decks that I use here for you. I use cards from my Italian Sibylla deck, and I use also a deck that 72 Names of God. It actually has Hebrew letters on it. And the funny thing is that the combination of the Hebrew letters, if I translate it to English or try to translate, which is M Yud He, would be like M I A. So it very much describes me your situation where this guy is coming in and out of your life, and when you are together, it feels very, very strong, and when you're not together, like literally immediately, it dissipates. And what I can tell you just looking at that is that he is not planning to change the pattern of his connection with you. And it really much depends on you. If you're one of the women that can ride this wave and this is what you're looking for and you want to enjoy the intimacy when you're together but be completely separate when you're not, then this guy is for you. Otherwise, it's really going to be hard to make any sort of consistent changes, no matter how much you're going to hoodoo him, his nature, and the nature of his whole neighborhood, because it feels to me like the guy is free now, he's divorced, and he's going to enjoy as much as he can. And then I looked into my Sibylla cards, and they indeed confirmed that. The card for you showed up right as well, which is the young lady. And then I have a card that represents a widower, somebody who is in cemetery, reversed, and reunion reversed. So if your question was, are we going to be together? If you don't do anything as is now, what I see is that you're going to be running different courses here and very shortly. But I also feel, unfortunately, is that you can do work on him, but because he has a certain intention in mind, and now that he's free, he's kind of enjoying what he's having, it's going to be really hard to change his mind, meaning you're going to have to do work on him all the time. Because you'll have to give him an attitude adjustment spiritually, so to speak, on a consistent basis. And I don't know if this is what you want to do. You need to really, really sit down and think about it, because it's going to be a lot of investment on your part. And if you feel cheated right now where he's checking out other women, then you're going to feel cheated even more, because you're going to feel cheated spiritually, because here you are spending all this time and money on candles and prayers and God knows what. And all he is being himself. So my suggestion here is to try to let go of this gentleman if you can, because another good thing, the good thing about the first card that I talked to you about, the Hebrew names of God, is that if you let go and you're just being patient, the right person with the right vibration is just going to come into your life. You're just not even going to know about it, how it happened, what it is. You're just going to look around and suddenly this person is going to be in your face and it's just going to feel right. So I would put my eggs into that basket, actually, and I would say free yourself from this person right now and open a door to a new person coming to your life.
Okay.
I hope this helps.
Thank you, Madam.
Okay.
Let's have Professor Porterfield add his insight.
Hello, ma'am. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, I'm all right. I've laid out three cards for you here, and I have to say that, first of all, I'm very much in agreement with what Madam Nadia said, and in fact, I think that she was, oh, how do I want to put this, sweet and kind about this. So, unfortunately, now you've got me. Let me ask you one quick question. What is his age in relationship to your age?
He's 5 years younger than me.
Right. Okay. Thought so. Because the first card I have down here is the Jack of Hearts. And the Jacks almost always represent someone who is younger than the person we're reading for. And if they're not biologically younger, they're often emotionally younger. So this Jack of Hearts is Jack Flash. Okay? This is the sort of man, he's confident, he's flirtatious, he's a little flighty, but he makes entrances into rooms, he thinks well of himself, he's, you know, Jack Flash, ta-da, here I am, look at me, aren't I wonderful, okay? And the problem here is that he is bound on either side by the Three of Clubs and the Four of Spades. Now, the Three of Clubs represents arguments, stubbornness, okay? And here in the left-hand position, that shows that that is the inner nature. That is what's going to be going on between the two of you. There's going to be continued fights, fusses, kerfuffles, as you put it, mishigas, the whole nine yards, all right? He is stubborn. He thinks he's correct. He thinks he's, you know, he's confident. He thinks what he does is the way it should be for him. Other people shouldn't have rules on him. His set of his rule book, his rules, his way. Don't like it? Highway. The other side of this is the Four of Spades. The Four of Spades is the sick bed. This is depletion, depression, leading often to physical illness. You need to run, not walk. Okay?
Okay.
This get. Let me tell you something that my great-grandmother once said. My great-grandmother said, a dog that will bring a bone will also take a bone. You don't need us to be turning over these cards for you. You already know. That's clear to me that you already know. I mean, come on. You went. You had a lovely time with him. You had a nice evening. You left. Okay? You get in the car, put the key in the car, turn, you know, drive away, and, you know, cue the, you know, cheesy bachelor pad music. He brings in this other woman. That's not grounds for, well, we should talk about this. That's grounds for, get the hell out of my life, dog, you. Okay?
Okay.
You know what he's like. You've already seen him. In fact, what he's like is what attracted you to him. You like his vivaciousness. You like his energy. You like that he's Jack Flash, okay? You're drawn to him like the other bevy of moths to that burning flame. But if you don't want to get your little wings more than singed that they already have been, you need to fly the hell away from this fire fast. So that's what I see, and I hope that has been of good help to you.
It has. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Porterfield. Jack Flash is going to be the hashtag of the week for those people. The Twitter and Instagram hashtag Jack Flash. I think it was very well put. Both Madam Nadia and Professor Porterfield are really hitting on something and what's going on in this situation. To be clear, we're not saying he's evil and needs to be destroyed or anything like that. But this is a man who is unwilling to change for you. And that's a problem, right? All relationships involve adjusting, acclimating, sacrifices. You know, the kind of, we talk often about, oh, person should just accept you for who you are, and you should accept them for who they are. What if who they are is an asshole, right? So relationships are involve change. That's something that people often have a hard time really coming to grasp with. And if a person truly loves you, they could have all sorts of flaws. They're willing to change. And that's the key to a successful relationship. It's how people who have bad paths can become better people, right? The right relationship, the right person, and the right volition on their end. And right now, this guy doesn't seem to be willing to do that. Now, that doesn't mean he's a bad guy or he's evil or whatnot. He's just not the right guy for you. He's not going to bring you happiness. The fight that you guys had is emblematic of the problems that you're facing as a couple and emblematic of the problems that you are going to continue to face if you try to keep holding on to this man.
Right.
So what I'm going to do is give you some working to help heal your heart, to help you overcome this pain, and then find the guy that is ideal for you. You don't need to do a lot. Starting a new relationship doesn't mean doing a million and one different workings in order to bring your ideal mate to you. It is about doing the right working. So I'm going to prescribe a bath working, a little bit of sex magic, and a little bit of candle work. So what you're going to do is get yourself some honey and milk. You're going to get rue and violet leaves that you have boiled into a tea. You're going to draw yourself a bath. You are going to pour the honey and milk into that bath along with the tea from the rue and violet leaf, and you're going to cover this with rose petals, and you are going to bathe in it. This is a milk and honey bath that I have frequently given out on the show. It is to uncross one's love life, to heal the hurts, to restore love, and to bring about new love. It's also a beautiful beauty bath, if you will. It's really good for the skin. You can let yourself soak in it. Do this as many times as you feel necessary, at least 3 times, but you can do it more if necessary. Bathe 3 times in it. Make sure that you let yourself air dry. If the honey is dissolved properly in the water and it shouldn't be a problem, you shouldn't be covered in sticky honey, so to speak. You're going to gather a bit of this bath water, just a small cupful, and you are going to pour it out on your front porch. You can pour it out in the lawn if you have, and you're going to call out to the person that is supposed to be your lover. Wherever you are in the world, come to my doorstep. Come quickly, come swiftly, I'm ready for you. Call out to this person and pour that out. You are then going to get yourself a small piece of paper, something that you can fold. You're going to write on it. You're going to do this while you're taking the bath. So like after you take the bath, sit down and do this. Write a list of qualities you are looking for in a guy. You can simply write, my perfect partner, right? It's fine. Or you can be more detailed. You're going to write it down, but every day you're going to refine the list. So you're going to write it down the first day. On the second day, you're going to go back to that list, and you're not going to add more to it. You're going to subtract. You're going to refine it. So, for example, if the two qualities are very similar to one another, you're going to replace them with one, for example. What this is doing is it's getting to the essence of what you want. And I often find that this is very useful for clients, because when I ask them to send me a list, the first list they'll tell me is he needs to be 6 foot tall, he needs to have blonde hair, he needs to do this type of job. And then by the time we get to the refined list, it's I need to be sexually attracted to him, he needs to be sexually attracted to me, he needs to have a good job. You know, so we get to the core rather than kind of the superficial quantity. And that doesn't mean that physical attributes are not part of it. Physical attributes are very important, but you get some more meaningful sort of physical attributes. So you want to write that list down, and on the third day, when you finish your bath, you should have your perfect list. You're going to take this list, fold it up, place it under a candle holder, and get yourself a pink candle. While visualizing this person, you are going to gather sexual fluids. Use your imagination. You know, I don't want to be vulgar on the radio show, but a little bit of sex magic is what's called for you. Gather those sexual things that are produced in that moment of intent and power and arousal, and you're going to anoint that candle with your sexual fluid and come to me oil. And you're going to light the candle and pray from deep within your heart, full and open for desire and true love for that person to come to you. You let the candle burn down, take the paper, and place it under your bed. You do this, and I have no doubt that you will find new love very swiftly. Let's see, we have only a minute left. If Madam Nadia or the supporter field have anything further to add based on what they have read.
Thank you all for your help.
Absolutely, and I hope it works out for you. I think Conjurman Ali's advice was strictly on point, and let us know what happens.
Will do.
Good luck.
Thank you very much for trusting us with your situation, and I do have no doubt that you will find the love that you are looking for. So thank you for calling in, and all the best. We are going to have the wonderful Papa Newt come in after a short break and lead us on to our next client.
Support for this programming is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of missionary independent spiritual churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our next client. Our next client is calling in from area code 707 in Sonoma County. This is Diana. Diana, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
And hello. Now, I see that you have not had any readings with Conjurman Ali or Miss Kat or anybody else on this situation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. And she writes, In November 2015, my husband of 17 years and father of four children was poached by his materialistic high school classmate and Facebook friend and widow. Embarrassingly, I'm hoping for reconciliation and have been treading lightly, hoping his midlife crisis affair will be burnt out. So I've been accepting his incoherent child support without a fuss, but finally went to the child support office. I didn't file for support earlier because I didn't have this to turn into a spittiness. I'm so sorry, hon. I didn't get to. Oh, it's okay. I didn't get to this to edit it. Wait, could you sum this up in just a few sentences?
Yes. Yes, and I did edit it, and that is they sent that one anyway. It was my mistake. Here's it in a nutshell.
Sorry.
I have been wanting to reconcile, so I've been treading very lightly on this subject as far as child support goes. So I was just taking whatever he was giving me, but it was not consistent and it was not on a timely basis. So I finally went down to the child support office, and they opened a case and they contacted him. Prior to that, he'd been paying the mortgage every month and giving me money. Now, since I did that, he said that I have to pay the mortgage now with that money, and that's simply not enough. And he said that's my problem for doing that. And,
okay.
I just want him to give me, to work with me here.
Certainly, certainly. Well, let's see what we can find out here for you. Turning it over to you, Conjurman Aldi.
Thank you, Papa Nuke. Diana, what is your sign of the zodiac?
I'm a Leo.
You are a Leo. And what is his sign of the zodiac?
Leo.
Leo and Leo. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Not often a combination that is without flaw or difficulty. Both of them can be quite troublesome when combined together. We generally like to see signs that are opposite or that have certain elemental resonance. So let's take a look at the cards and see what they portend. I've pulled three of them here, and I think they're very clear in what's going on. The first card is the Death card. The Death card shows us a skeletal figure armed in black garb, riding a pale horse, holding a black flag, and it is trampling over the living. The prince and pauper, religious figure and non-religious figure, male and female, young and old. And this is a figure that is unstoppable. It is relentless. It is inevitable. What you experienced was somewhat inevitable. It was the death of your relationship. And you use a very interesting term. You said poached. He was not poached. That's not what happened. It's his fault. He made a choice. He made a decision. Was he influenced? Was he swayed? Sure, why? Of course. But if there was not something within him that allowed that influence to take hold, then he wouldn't have left. This was a somewhat inevitable situation because he had been feeling it for a while. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen because this person appeared. This person is merely part of a broader crisis he's facing. Now, you called it a midlife crisis, and you could very well be right. But if it had not person, this high school, Facebook, whatever friend, he would have found another reason in order to leave. The relationship was dying. There was a decay setting in, at least from what he felt. And it's very important to recognize that. The next card that we have is the Four of Swords. Just as we see the sun rising off into the distance in the Death card, so too does this card tell us that things are not entirely over. We see a sarcophagus of a knight who is in repose, three swords hung above him and a fourth on the sarcophagus, and the sarcophagus is open, it's not completely closed, meaning that there are still ghosts that haunt him, there are still issues that he's dealing with, and part of him leaving is dealing with those issues, dealing with the sort of restlessness that had set in for a long time. But it also is telling us that he has not completely closed the door of the relationship, that there is something still there. That doesn't mean that you need to tread carefully. You need to do what's right for you and your kid. Stability is more important than tiptoeing around his feeling, and that is very important to understand. If there's one thing you take away from this reading, is that, look, he made his choice. He made his decision. He's dealing with his own problems. But by choosing to leave, that's no longer your job to worry about his feelings. It's not your job to tiptoe around his feelings. You need to take care of you and yours. Now, the good news is that there is hope here that he may indeed return. Whether you accept him or not is an entirely different matter. That's up to you. But the final card that we have is the High Priestess. This is a woman who has fully come into her own, a powerful priestess sitting between two pillars, guarding the entrance to the Temple of Solomon. There is a veil of pomegranate behind her. You need to do what's right by you. You need to make sure that you are financially taken care of. You need to make sure that you adjust to this new lifestyle where you are independent of him emotionally, physically. He's made his choice. Now you need to make your choice and build your own life. Interestingly, by doing that, you are then in a more powerful position, because when he returns, you can then choose, do you want this man back or not? But you have to focus on yourself. You need to focus on you and your children and being in a better place. When you can do that, when you become the High Priestess, the woman who is in her own, who has come into her own, then you hold the keys to the temple. And it's up to you to accept him or not. Rootwork-wise, this does tell me that if you want this man back, you need to be doing work to make sure that he pays and pays up, and that you and yours are taken care of. You might consider hiring a root worker to break them up, because I don't believe you have the power to do that portion of the work. But the majority of what you should be focusing on is on yourself and becoming independent. That, in turn, will lead to your kind of end goal. That's what I see here. I'm going to turn this over to Professor Porterfield, who's going to do our next reading, and then Madam Nadia is going to give you some root work advice. So, Professor Porterfield, what insight and wisdom can you give her?
Thank you, Ali. Hello, ma'am.
Hi.
I have a quick question for you. How many children do you have?
We have twins together biologically and two, like Brady Bunch. I had one, he had one. So altogether there's four. I still have two in the house.
And how old are the two that are with you?
16.
All right. So this is just the day. You know, we see this happen so often on the show where the readings and the clients just seem to dovetail each other. Today is the hashtag of Jack Flash. I'm going to have to disagree with Ali. I think today is the hashtag of a dog that will bring a bone will take a bone. What I have here, first card for you, is the King of Diamonds. Okay, so this is the X, okay? And the King of Diamonds is called the Banker, energetic, forceful thinking man who is very concerned with material matters. All right, money is precious to him and very important to him. Sitting to his immediate right, we have the Two of Spades. This is not a good card here at all. This is the duel, okay? You know, like in the old Western movies, the two guys leave the saloon and go out into the street with guns. This is a face-off, and this is what you're locked into with him. This is what he's doing. He was giving you money kind of haphazardly. He was giving you some here. He was giving you some there. He was paying this. He was paying that. It wasn't on a set schedule. It was under his oblesse, under his, kind of authority. And when you said, no, not any good anymore, can't have that, got to have a system, all of a sudden, boom, we're in the street with guns, okay? Now he's saying, oh, now it's going to be my Bubba. He still wants to be the King of Diamonds. He still wants to be in charge of this. And the card immediately to his left here is the Ten of Clubs. And this is about accomplishment and ownership, okay? This is very much about ownership of material things. He still has a concept that home is his in a material sense. that he is. What I'm seeing here is the grand man. He thinks he's up here on the hilltop. He's giving you this money. He's doing these things for you. And that, pardon my language, I don't mean to be crude, is horse shit. Okay? That is not the way it is. He has responsibilities to those children. He has responsibilities to you. He's the one that's been left. Conjure Man Ali is quite accurate when he says he was not poached. He was not poached. He's not a big game animal on a preserve, okay? He's not a deer on the king's land, okay? This woman did not come along and go, oh, look, a poor, helpless, idiotic man who can't add or tie his own shoes. I will crook my little finger at him, and he will, of course, follow me because the wildlife preserve guards, meaning you, aren't watching him right now. And if for a moment, let's just say this for a moment. Let's say we're wrong. Let's say Ali and I are way off base, and he was actually poached. Do you really want a man who can be poached, a helpless deer who's sort of wandering around cross-eyed, trying to find the nearest corn feeder and salt lick? You know, do you actually want that to be your husband?
That's what's so hard about this, because I don't want someone who would do that, nor can I understand why she would want someone who would do that. You know?
Well,
she's got
you know,
him all
whatever
over Facebook begging.
Whatever she wants is her business, you know. If she wants foolishness and distrust and disloyalty and someone who cannot be relied on, hey, mazel tov, good for her, you know. That's her misery. All she did was liberate you of this misery, okay? She liberated you of a guy who's willing to abandon his wife, abandon his responsibilities, abandon his children, and just go flitter off with, you know, well, I knew her in high school. Let me tell you something. Let me be completely honest with you. If I'd never talked to anyone I was with in high school again, it's a lucky day. Okay? So this guy is acting in an immature and backwards fashion. And Ali is absolutely right. Right now, you need to take care of yourself. Look at this card right here, the Two of Spades. You're in a duel with him right now, okay? If you don't protect yourself, he will overcome you. He will cheat you. He will take away what is your due. He will find the best way. You need to have a lawyer, okay? You need to be taking action. I understand you may still have feelings for him, and if you do and you want to go down that path, I can't stop you. No one can stop you, but I think you're buying yourself a big passel of misery. And you've already had misery, so say, hey, I've had it. That's it. I didn't want it. He brought it. Good. It's gone now. Now I need to take care of myself. I need to stabilize my situation for my own well-being, for my children's well-being, and for my household. And then I need to empower myself because I am still a beautiful, intelligent, vivacious, wonderful human being, and I deserve to have someone else. And then go find yourself a man who is not looking for the nearest corn feeder and salt lick, wandering around with crossed eyes, who needs some sort of animal protection society to keep him from being poached. And I hope that has been of some help to you.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Madam Nadia, what would you recommend in this situation?
Well, hello, my dear. I am, first of all, very sorry for everything that's going on in your life. I totally understand and relate. There's a lot of heartache. And I think that one of the things that is even bigger and scarier in situations like that is the big and looming changes, and sometimes it's just almost easier for us to stick our head in the sand and hope for the better, for things to change and so forth. Unfortunately, I'm here with the two gentlemen, and I think that bringing back this specific person maybe is possible, but it's not in your best interest. Both of you are Leos. You already sort of he hasn't been poached, but you poked him and irritated him by saying, hey, dude, I need you to start paying what you're really supposed to be paying. So now he's being a proud Leo whose pride is being hurt. But you shouldn't forget that you're not the ship isn't. You're a Leo, and it's time to step up to the plate and demand what's yours. You have two children together. He has a responsibility for that. Let's not forget that. And I also can assure you, as a woman to a woman, the minute you're going to start stepping back into your power, he's going to start looking at you differently, and if nothing else, he's going to start giving you more respect and being on time with his payments. So what I want you to do is the following. I want you to take a list and write out 7 bullet points or 7 words that represent who you are and why you deserve a great relationship, okay? I want them to be 7. I also want you to take some sort of a material like clay, Fimo, anything of that nature. And I want you to make a little doll baby. But instead of making a little doll baby on somebody else, I want it to be a doll baby of you. I want you to take some of your hair, some of your fingernails, and I want you to take a little bit of your pussy juice and put it all together and put it inside that doll. You're going to baptize this doll. You're going to baptize it with rose water, and you're going to name it for yourself, and you're going to do it on a night of a full moon. Now, you're also going to get some of his old clothing. What I would suggest that you take is actually if you have a piece, if you can get a hold of a pair of his old underwear and take the, take like a string or something, like cut a piece out or that you can wrap around your doll, I would suggest doing that. And make you 7 knots. Take a piece that you can tie around that little dolly that you made and make 7 knots. You're also going to take 7 little tea lights. I suggest them being black. It's a good time to get black tea lights because we're about Halloween time and Michael sells them. And I want you to, now you made your doll. You made it on the night of a full moon. As the moon is going to start waning, you're going to do this for 7 nights. Every night you're going to light a black candle. You're going to meditate and recite 1 bullet point of why you deserve and worth a better relationship. And then you're going to cut 1 of the knots that you made on that dolly. So basically by the 7th day, you're going to cut them all off. I want you to take whatever's left from his underwear and whatever's left from the wax, and I want you to bury it in the cemetery. And then I want you to take your own dolly. I want you to buy a basil plant that you're going to put in your kitchen, and I want that dolly to be in the basil plant. If you want it to be on top of the on the earth, it's totally fine. If you want it to be inside, it's totally fine. But you're going to love and water that basil plant. That's going to bring energy to your family, to your home, and it's going to uplift you spiritually as well, and it's going to remind you of your independence, and also of your ability to provide for yourself and your vitality, okay? So do those 2 things, and I promise you that you're going to wake up in the next full moon and you're going to be a completely changed new woman. I assure you that, okay?
Thank you. God, thank you.
Are you very, very welcome, and I'm sure gentlemen will have some additional information here or suggestions.
Okay.
Guys,
I'm here. Well, we seem to have lost Conjure Man Ali for a brief moment, so we're going to carry on without him. And
no, you, I'm here.
There he is.
I haven't been lost. I just had nothing to add.
Oh, okay. Well, I have one thing I would add to this. I would say, get yourself a white candle. Unless he starts acting up a lot worse. If he starts acting up a lot worse, replace that white candle with a black candle. And over that candle, I would like you to pray the 19th verse of Psalm 18. So that's going to be Psalm 18, verse 19. And you're going to place that candle in a window, particularly if you have a window that faces a street or a driveway to your home, and you will light that candle as the evening hours come on and burn that candle in the window. Again, you're going to use a white candle unless he starts to really act up, and then we're going to go straight to a black candle.
Thank you, Professor Portico. Those are some fantastic suggestions. I do wish you luck, and hopefully all things will be improved. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back in with our free spell.
Thank you. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Kendala's Corner, starring Kendala Kambisa and Michael Correll, Mondays 5 to 7. The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
A big thank you to Troll Towelhead, our chief engineer here at the LMC Radio Network, for those wonderful announcements. Now it's time for our free spell segment with Professor Porterfield at ProfessorPorterfield.com. Take it away, Professor.
Thank you, Papa Newt. Well, we're going to try to bring it all together here into one nice package. How we're going to try to bring the graveyard and getting rid of troubles that our two clients today have had and make it go. So here we go. Today's spell is how to lay your troubles to rest with a nine of spades. So if you wish to rid yourself of troubles or bad habits or addictions or bad people that are involved in your life that you need to be able to get rid of, or again, we're not harming them, we need to be able to break the ties to them, you can send those habits, addictions, or connections to the graveyard by using a nine of spades. To do this, you will take a nine of spades, turn it sideways, and write the trouble that you wish to be rid of across the middle spade. And that will be carried to the graveyard by the eight pallbearer spades on either side. Dress this card with banishing oil at its corners and centers, and then dress a white candle with Run Devil Run oil and place it on top of the card. Light the candle, pray James 7:4, that's James 7:4, and the 121st Psalm over the card and candle, and state your intentions to reject this thing that is troubling you and to be free of it. When the candle is done burning, wrap up the card and the remaining wax in a black silk handkerchief or a piece of black cloth and tie it with black thread and then carry them to the graveyard and bury them there. And hopefully that will be of good help and aid to all of you who have some bad habit, some addiction, smoking, some person that you need. I love this person, but I need to break away from them or whatever.
I think it's a particularly fantastic spell for some of the people who have called onto the show today. So I think it's quite fitting. Run, Devil, Run. You don't see that used very often anymore, and it's quite unfortunate. Back in the day, it was quite popular, not just for driving out devils in the literal sense of like any kind of evil from a home, but it was also used for things like addiction and problems and issues that you were dealing with, because the idea was that that addiction was a devil of some sort. So yeah, I think that's absolutely fantastic working. What do you think, Madam Nadia?
Well, I love it. The professor knows that I am a fan of anything that you can do with playing cards. I absolutely love it because they're such a potent tool, and also because for me, the more you can visualize and connect to what you're doing and your spell work, the more successful you are on being focused on the work. And when you say, well, I want to get rid of my addiction to blah, 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 right? It's a big idea. It's difficult things. Addictions are not an easy thing. Otherwise, we would not, you know, be having rehabs and things like that. But when you start putting it into a visual item like the card, it becomes so much easier. You can also, for instance, write on the card. You can write a whole petition. Or if you want to get rid of the person, what I would do is that I would print out a little small picture of that person, and I would take, if you want to be nice, maybe a push pin. But if you want to be a little bit more naughty, I would get maybe a nail. You know, we all know what nails I'm talking.
Oh, we've lost you, Beverly. Madam Nadia, you sound like you're talking from far, far away.
Oh, I was in my
there
head just enjoying the spell. Okay, I'm back. Okay, good. So what I was saying is that I would either write a petition on the card, or if I wanted to do something related to a person that I want to get rid of, I would print out the picture of there, and I would put that picture in between the card and the candle, and I would take either a black pushpin, or I would take a nail, like a coffin nail, and drive it through that one central pointy spade on the nine of spades to make it even more concrete and focused in the work, depending, of course, on the work that you're doing. And then take this whole mess and bury that at the graveyard to just make it a little bit more spicy, I guess.
You could also do the same thing even if it wasn't a person. If, say, you were having a problem with cigarettes, you could print out a picture of a cigarette or take a cigarette itself and drive that coffin nail through the cigarette or through the picture of the cigarette or the picture of the bottle of whiskey or the picture of the gambling machine, again, into that center space.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, Conjure Man Ali's quite right. We don't use Run Devil Run very much anymore, and I love Run Devil Run. I mean, it is my go-to. And I always advise people, use James 7:4. When you use Run Devil Run oil for this sort of work, in my opinion, one of the most appropriate, obviously there are many others, but one of the most appropriate passages to use with it is James 4:7, because it is actually associated to the recipe Run Devil Run. They are not.
Yes.
You know, a lot of times we add something to it. We say, oh, well, we're going to say the Song of Solomon, Overcome to Me, or Cleome, and those things aren't necessarily directly involved. We're bringing another element in. But here, James 4:7 is directly related to Run Devil Run, because it even says, resist the devil and he will flee from you.
Yes. And Run Devil Run, interestingly, is predominantly, not used for traditionally. It can be used for people. It definitely can be. But Hot Foot was used more often than that. Run Devil Run had this fantastic use for driving away issues and problems, because the idea was the devils come into your house and they cause a ruckus and they cause problems and they cause issues. And so you use Run Devil Run to drive those devils out. And it's for some reason it has somewhat fallen out of favor, and now we see instead the use of banishing oil. I'm happy to see these kind of older recipes brought back, because I think they are quite fantastic. We have come to the end of our show, so let us have Papa Newt take us out, and then we'll all say goodbye.
Thank you, Conjurman Ali, and thank you, Madam Nadia, and thank you, Professor Porterfield at ProfessorPorterfield.com in Denton, Texas, for being our guest this week. We do invite you to tune in next week, and we'll have another special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, so stay tuned. Once again, we come to an end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Conjurman Ali at ConjurmanAli.com in Mission Viejo, California, and Madam Nadia at MadamNadia.com in Chicago, Illinois. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt, joining you from PapaNewt.com in Columbus, Nebraska. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via LuckyMojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to say thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time when you'll hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thanks, Papa Newt. Couldn't have done it without you. Definitely a special thank you and shout out to the wonderful Madam Nadia for filling in as co-host this afternoon, and to Professor Porterfield for bringing such a fantastic topic. It's always a blast hanging out and chatting with you both. You guys are definitely one of my favorite teams.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here as always.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you to everyone who tuned in and listened. The show is not possible without all of our wonderful, faithful listeners, those that participate in the chat and those that listen on the phone. make sure to light your candles, say your prayers as the week goes on. You are all, I'm calling on all of you who are spiritually inclined to step up for your community and to be the root workers and spiritual leaders that you've all been called to be. Hopefully next week we will have the wonderful Miss Cat back and we'll have our regular show. Have a great week, everyone, and goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.